Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
All right, I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley. That dude.
Yes, sir.
All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Coming up, we'll tell you if Janie Buss needs to fire back at Magic Johnson. We start today with the Warriors. It's clear now that Steph Curry is basketball's Tom Brady. And that just might mean LeBron James is Peyton Manning. That's what immediately crossed my mind in the aftermath of the Golden State Warriors' sweep of the Portland Trailblazers last night. Steph Curry has built a basketball culture that rivals the one Brady has cultivated with the New England Patriots. Let's call it plug and play or next man up. The parts are interchangeable and replaceable. The system works best when Curry and Brady are the focus, but it can survive the absence of any part, including its high-profile engine. Last night, the Warriors eliminated Portland in overtime, 119-117, without the services of three of its top six players. Kevin Durant, Boogie Cousins, and Andre Iguodala sat with injuries. This is simply amazing. Curry recorded a triple-double, 37 points, 13 rebounds, and 11 assists. He played 47 minutes total and every minute of the second half in overtime. Game four was his magnum opus. It's the signature game of his career. It's the game that illustrates his value and establishes him as the most important player of his era. Important is different from most valuable. Tom Brady is the GOAT because of his importance to the Patriots way that has produced six Super Bowl victories and nine Super Bowl appearances. The Warriors way is headed to its fifth straight NBA Finals. They're the first squad to go to five straight since the Boston Celtics dominated a nine-team league. LeBron James is more valuable than Stephen Curry, but King James is not as important. Curry's style of play has changed the NBA, and his team-first mindset has created a consistent culture of winning. LeBron James can't claim either one of those things. Steph is Brady, LeBron is Manning. It was just 10 years ago that nearly everyone thought Manning was superior to Brady. In 2009, Manning won his fourth MVP award and played in his second Super Bowl. 4 years later, Manning won a fifth MVP, and most people still thought he was the GOAT. Brady's won three Super Bowl titles since then and has ended the GOAT debate. That's where we're headed with LeBron versus Steph. Winning eventually overwhelms individual talent and individual accomplishment. And yes, today there's a debate about what's more impressive, LeBron's individual streak of eight straight finals appearances or Golden State's five straight. That conversation will end in June if the Warriors win their fourth title in 5 years. LeBron's streak in a weakened Eastern Conference is impressive, but it's nowhere near the equal of winning four titles in 5 years. LeBron is a spectacular individual talent who struggles to produce the kind of continuity and stability necessary to build a sustainable culture. His unwillingness to partner with any head coach has cost him titles. It's undermined his pursuit of Michael Jordan. Steph Curry has produced the dynasty that rivals Michael Jordan's Bulls. If Curry finishes with five or six titles in Golden State, he'll join Kobe Bryant as yet another NBA legend more important than LeBron. All right, joining the desk now are a couple of NBA champions, Kendrick Perkins, and for the first time, B.J. Armstrong. Welcome. All right, Marcellus, we'll start with you. Will Steph have a greater legacy than even LeBron James?
No. No, he won't. And I won't make this mistake of exaggerating an individual's greatness based on team success. I wasn't raised that way. That's not the way I threw the ball around the park. That's not the way I was recruited to go to high school, violation, college, you know, having Thanksgiving at the alum's house, violation. I was never raised that way, but, you know, getting into the big business of pro sports, we understand that this is a TV show and many of conversations will spur from what happens on the field, on the court. I look at it this way. You know me, my favorite sport is track. And track is the first sport, and it's the simplest sport. And it always answers all of athletics' riddles. Here's the one it solves right here. Watch a team run a relay, and there's one question you will ask everybody. Who won? What did they run in terms of time? And then the real astute, the smart, track purists would say, let me see those splits. You know what a split is? Who did what to get them to that position? When you start looking at the splits, LeBron James has run the fastest split of these two. Even though Steph's team will cross the finish line more times with the gold on, who ran the fastest split? Mm. No conversation, LeBron James.
Let me just, before y'all.
Oh, we got to say that.
Because you won't believe this, but once upon a time, I ran the 4x100 relay. And sometimes, you know what was more important than the splits?
What?
How you pass that baton.
You ain't lying. Gotta get that thing around.
And nobody passes the baton better than Steph.
Great point.
Will Steph's legacy outshine LeBron's?
Well, you're looking at two players that have had an enormous impact on the game of basketball. From an individual standpoint, LeBron James, what he's done athletically and what he's been able to achieve in performing the way he's performed speaks for itself. Steph Curry, on the other hand, you look at his team and what he's been able to do to implement his skill set into a team, which we all seem, for whatever reason, we seem to be able to identify with more than just the great individual talent. I think what Steph Curry has done, he's really transformed the game, where at one point in this league, we were an inside-out league, and now we're saying we're an outside-in. So Steph Curry's impact on the game, as you're seeing it now, is really having an impact on the way we teach the game, the way the game is played, but more importantly, how we defend and we view the game. We're looking, Steph Curry did something last night to me was as unique as I've seen. Late in that fourth quarter, he was open from two and he traveled trying to get back to three.
Yeah, yeah.
And no one said anything.
Well, his brother did.
Yeah, because that's the way the game is played now. The analytics has really made this game now to where bigs like Kendrick, all of a sudden now we value small ball and you're seeing the impact that it's having.
Well, the way this barbershop is played and the way we run it, which one's going to have the greater legacy? You got to pick something. Oh. Come on, BJ. This ain't agent talk right here. We'll be in the barbershop.
I think LeBron James
will have, because of
the individual, we're always looking for the great individual talent, and LeBron James is a standalone player.
Perk.
Okay, so I'm going to take Marcella's approach, and I'm going to the stat sheet today, okay? So, individually, LeBron James has 32,000 points, 8,000 assists, 8,000 rebounds, probably is going to be the only player to finish with a 30,000, 10,000, 10,000. He's a three-time champ, three-time final MVP, a four-times MVP, 15-time All-Star, three-time All-Star MVP, a 12-time first-team All-NBA, five-time first-team All-Defensive Team.
That's my baby.
Nine times to the finals.
That's my baby.
Nine times to the finals. And in 2019, this past year, he was he had the number one jersey sale, number one top shoe sale.
Again.
Every time LeBron James leave a franchise, the next year the franchise is in the lottery. He's the only guy that I've seen. LeBron had the, coming out of high school, his expectations for him was through the roof.
Yeah.
He got tattooed on his back, the chosen one, and from the day he stepped into the NBA, he lived up to the expectations. And no knock on Steph Curry, he's doing a great job over there, and they're building a dynasty, and he's, you know, he's, like BJ said, he's changed the game. Mm-hmm. Steph Curry is a phenomenal player. He will go down in the Hall of Fame. But at the end of the day, we cannot sit up here and say we go decide the legacy between winning championships. Because if that's the case, then that means Robert Horry was better than Kevin Garnett. Yes, it is. Because we're not about to sit up here and say, oh, Robert Horry was better than Charles Barkley because he didn't have rings.
I know.
So we're not about to say winning championships define your legacy. This man is arguably the greatest player when you putting him on the side of Michael Jordan to ever play the game of basketball. So to me, this is apples and oranges, and it's a disrespect to LeBron James in the utmost.
As a football person, I've heard all this argument. And I heard it for all throughout the 2000s, the 2010s, Peyton Manning stats and blah. You could run them all, and five-time MVP and blah blah blah. And it all sounded good to me. I'm from Indianapolis, and it all, until it got to a point where, like, damn, Brady done won six Super Bowls, and for 20 years he has powered that organization and created a culture, and all of a sudden the debate just quit. it quit coming down to just stats. And Robert Horry and a bunch of other guys ain't in this conversation because they never drove a team.
Okay.
This guy is driving a team, and these accomplishments, winning is what it's all about at the end of the day.
And I think Steph thrives in this system with Golden State.
Yeah.
I think Draymond and Klay make Steph just like Steph makes them. I think they cohesive.
Yeah.
But can you take Steph Curry? You could take Tom Brady and put him on the Dallas Cowboys, and he probably could take the Cowboys to a Super Bowl or win a Super Bowl. Can you take Steph Curry and go put him on today's Chicago Bulls and expect high expectations for the Chicago Bulls? No, you could take LeBron James and put him on Chicago Bulls, and they instantly become a playoff and a contender team.
Okay, Kendrick, and that's great that you just said that. But I just watched LeBron James show up to Los Angeles. They did not play in April, May. They're not in the playoffs.
Yeah, but listen to this. Before he got hurt, they was a top five seed. Before LeBron James got
hurt
on Christmas
Day. And there was two games out of 10th place as well. Yeah. They was hanging
by a
thread.
And that's why the barbershop never closes. And it takes so long to get your damn haircut. Y'all be making up all these
things. Listen, but I'm a fan of Steph, man. I am, man.
It's not disrespectful to have this conversation.
No, it's not. I'm a fan of Steph. What the Golden State Warriors did last night, that was beautiful basketball. I haven't seen that in a while. Beautiful from top to bottom. Steve Kerr needs to get credit for that because he put guys in position to be successful, and I'm not taking nothing from Steph. Steph is a phenomenal player, and he's going to go down in the Hall of Fame. But at the end of the day, are you going to put Steph on Mount Rushmore?
Absolutely.
Really?
If this continues and he gets to a fifth or sixth title, and just like BJ has said, even more so than Michael Jordan, and I think I won't say more so, because Jordan's impact was incredible.
Yeah.
But in terms of changing the way we play the game, the way we view the game, everything, Steph Curry has done that.
Nope.
It's his league.
But
it's a three-point shooting league.
I'm going to tell you one thing he haven't done. He haven't won the finals MVP.
Mm. Okay. Mm. So?
Well, Willock, look, I do want to drill down one thing. Because I saw you draw the parallels and the comparisons. Great. And it makes sense. It maps conveniently. Right. But are you really going to go down and say that? Because you didn't say how LeBron's legacy will continue. You said if Steph continues, we have to also imagine what LeBron can do. You're going to say that Steph Curry will have a greater legacy than LeBron James. I just want to hear that simple.
If this continues and they get to a fifth or sixth title, I don't think LeBron's winning any more titles.
Okay.
Particularly if he stays here in Los Angeles with the Lakers.
Great success for Steph continued and doomsday for LeBron.
Not doomsday, just not titles.
Okay.
Again, they may make play. I just don't think they're winning any more titles here LeBron.
I think KD leaves Golden State. I think the West is wide open next year.
KD has left Golden State and they just swept Portland. if you think when KD leaves, there won't be some, I'm not saying great players like KD, but there's going to be, let me get over here to Golden State and help them. That's going to create an opportunity. And trust me, Golden State will have their pick, not of superstars, but of some, there's going to be some 30, 29-year-old out there who can really play, who's going to go fill in that piece.
Agree.
And
I
they're
agree.
Going to be a title contender continuing forward.
Healthy Boogie. That could still be it.
They don't have the money to pay.
Well, I mean, one of the things that you're seeing is the division within this league, which we're talking about here, is the analytics, which is Steph Curry. Steph Curry, now we are a three-point shooting league.
Yeah.
And the three-point shot is here. And then we have this other way of thought. It's just basketball, the purest. You know, we play the game and slow down. And in the playoffs, the game more resembles that style of play. The one thing...
It does?
Yes. Because when you watch the game and how it's played, especially in the playoffs, you got to get the best shot that you can possibly get. The most uncontested shots that you can get during the course of the game. And that's the value of watching the Warriors. The Warriors are a very unique team from this standpoint.
Right. Mm-hmm.
When that's Draymond Green rebounds the ball, their offense starts. They're the only team in the league that no team has been able to take that away from them, because when Draymond rebounds the ball, he is as good of a decision maker as any point guard in transition.
Mm-hmm.
So Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant, they don't have the burden of saying they have to do other things like initiate an offense or run the team. Draymond gets the ball and pushes it out, and they're getting uncontested shots, whether it's a layup, whether it's a three, because Draymond allows them to play a way that no other team in the league can play. And that's what makes them a very difficult team, is because no one can contest them on a consistent basis the way they play.
But BJ, I think you're right. There is a war going on, analytics versus what I consider like old school superstar ball.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And this is what I like about, or where I think Steph is winning. I think the league is all leaning into system and play an offensive system that fits the everybody on the court. That's what Steph and them do, as opposed to superstar at the top of the key playing ISO ball and making all the decisions. That's what LeBron, D-Wade, Kevin Durant falls into that a little bit. James Harden, they fall into that. I think the league, if you look at the Lakers doubling down, like, hey, man, I know you want us to hire Tyronn Lue, but we're going the way of the rest of the league. We're going to hire a coach and try to establish a system. I see that all, again, and we're not going to have this conversation now, but this is why a lot of these former players can't get head coaching jobs right now. They're going with guys out of the film room, the system guys, the analytic guys, as coaches. Steph and Golden State are driving that.
And see, but the thing I have with that problem of the analytic guys, yeah, is that, yeah, you watch Steph and you watch Golden State, and everybody try to mimic Golden State, right? So everybody want to say, oh, I want to build a team like Golden State.
Yeah.
But you don't have the personnel like Golden State. So the analytics in some way is fool's gold in the source, because if you don't have the personnel to play the way that Golden State is, then that goes out the window. Because for the simple fact that they say, oh, well, Golden State, they don't like shooting mid-range shots. No, that's bull crap. Klay Thompson take a lot of mid-range shots.
They all do.
And so Houston falls into it, and what do, they look horrible. You watch Eric Gordon, who I played with. Who's been a great player. Mm-hmm. You watch him have to take and 36 foot threes, because this is what they're teaching. Oh, the analytics say, oh, we gonna take threes or drive all the way to the basket. I watched Steph. When Steph struggled a little bit, he may miss a couple threes. He'll step in and pull in a little free throw line. Jay, it's nothing wrong with it.
To your point, it's a war of the two worlds, right, and you have to have the proper balancing act. What the Warriors did was go analytics first, and then everyone leaned too far into it, to the point where now Golden State was the eighth best three-point shooting team this year. Eighth best. Everybody else is way too in front of their skis trying to be the one. Right. And they're leaving those mid-range jumpers, getting cuts to the baskets, back door. All that is still open for
the Warriors. I look at the league, though, saying, let's look at the Denver Nuggets. Again, they don't play exactly Golden State's way, but they're in that lane.
Mm-hmm.
Portland, even last night, to me, took Damian Lillard off the ball and did other things to compete in that game. Portland has a system that they believe in. Again, LeBron and his group have a system of superstars show up and let's build something around them. Let's don't plug them into a system. I even go back, and again, this is where I say LeBron's fault not partnering with a coach. Michael Jordan, as great as he was talent-wise, they still ran the triangle offensive system. It was still Tex Winters and Phil Jackson and a system. LeBron and I think some guys have gone overboard on that. It's like, no, I am the system. I'm gonna sit out here at the top of the key and everybody's gonna eat off me. It doesn't win as consistently, or certainly can't survive all the obstacles Golden State
but
has.
But on a quick note, what coach out there can you go get to coach Braun? Is my thing. You can't. It's not like you can go take Greg Popovich from the Spurs and say, hey, come be this man. You know, you
sometimes when you're that great of a player, it's not about what coach, it's what you will allow as the great player. What coaching will you allow to happen? And God forgive me for saying this, people are gonna laugh, be upset, but Perk, when it comes to sports writing and as a columnist, I'm on LeBron's level.
Mm, say that.
And the only way that I was able to reach my height was to get there and say, you know what, you don't know everything.
Right.
Let some people help you.
Right. Yeah.
And back off. You are great as this, but you're better with help, even when the help is wrong.
Yeah.
And again, that's what LeBron hasn't been able to do.
But who's to say it? See, I was in the locker room. And I watched T. Lou go at Braun in film room and say, oh, no, we running it this way. And Bron say, nah, well, how about we? No, we go run it this way, and if it don't work, then we'll try it your way. I watch Bron be coachable. So, but if he feel like he could run over you, that's with any player.
Okay, and here's the deal. This is, again, where I would say, because LeBron does like Ty Lue, and I believe you and others who have said this about Ty Lue, but LeBron left Cleveland. He left Ty Lue in Cleveland and that situation to come out here and do his own thing, treated Luke Walton wrong, and then wasn't in position to bring Ty Lue out here or whoever. But you got to allow the coaching. Trust me, Michael Jordan was going to be successful with or without coaching. Kobe, with or without coaching. All these all-time. But eventually, they allowed it. They allowed a coach to coach and gave in. And to me, LeBron should have never left Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley if he wanted to reach his full potential as a winner.
But I think I agree with you on that extent to a certain, but I think he made the right move to go back to Cleveland. I thought that was the best for his thing. It's just, it's the same
individual
thing.
Because
it's almost the same argument that we having with Chris Broussard tweet yesterday. The asterisk behind KD title.
Asterisk, yeah.
Okay, asterisk behind KD title. Mm. It's the same thing with Bron in Miami. Okay, you went joined with D-Wade and Chris Bosh and formed this super team. Okay, Bron, so I'm going to show you. I'm going to go to Cleveland, and I'm going to join forces with Kyrie, who never won anything without LeBron.
And it was great feathers.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So
LeBron's a gypsy, and gypsies pay a price.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, NBA champions Kendrick Perkins, and NBA agent B.J. Armstrong, also an NBA champion, 3-time. All right, time now for our big story. Let's move to the Lakers, where the start of the Frank Vogel era was overshadowed by Magic Johnson's scorched earth interview about his abrupt resignation from the team. Vogel was introduced as the new head coach yesterday, but owner Jeannie Buss was noticeably absent from the press conference, which left ESPN's Ramona Shelbourne questioning Buss's leadership, writing, quote, "Every decision they've made, from installing Pelinka as the top basketball decision maker to settling on their third coach as head coach, has been woefully unpopular. Worse, there's been no one from the organization willing to explain anything in the public spotlight. This used to be an area in which Jeannie Buss excelled. She was always willing to take questions, even harsh ones, but she has been out of sight as of late, seemingly resigned to taking all the criticism coming her way." I think Jeannie Buss needs to respond to Magic's attack. I don't think she can hide and just think it's all gonna blow over and go away.
And say what? People always say face the music. That's when you have something to say. We all know actions speak louder than words. And unfortunately, there's a correlation between her and being a part of ownership and the Lakers having their worst 6 years in terms of no playoff success and losing records. So I don't know what she could say in those moments. I think it's okay to have a defense when you also have an offense. And the offense is we're winning games, we're doing some things right. But if you're just going to go out there and respond to some attacks without anything else to support it, but he say, she say, I think that will come off wrong. So it's amazing that Ramona has finally written this article. This is something that a lot of people have been watching in terms of the lack of leadership and ownership. I don't think Jeannie's ready for these moments, but she does have confidence. The Lakers had lean years before. Remember when they, in the championship world that the Lakers always live in, they went 8 years without winning the championship, early, mid-90s, post-Magic. It got lean, 31 wins at a time before Shaq and Kobe. And I think she's trying to use that as her confidence. She rode the wave in terms of being there with her father, Dr. Buss, in those moments. I think she's trying to do that again, stay silent until you could come out and really do some damage.
Well, you know, when I look at the situation, I have to deal with this team from an agent perspective. I have to deal with this team and knowing all of the players. I know Rob, I know Irving. And the one thing is when you have an organization like the Lakers or any team in this league is about four people have to sit at the table of success. You have to have an owner, you have to have the general manager, you have to have the coach, and you have the player. And if any of those four that sit at that table of excellence or that table of success aren't aligned with each other, this is what you get is chaos. Mm. And now the days of an owner being an absentee owner are over in today's professional landscape as a league, especially in the NBA. So the owners have to be involved if you're going to have success in today's sport. The one thing that is probably the secret sauce, if you will, the one thing that's lacking that we see, which I think Ramona touched on, you have to have internal leadership if you're going to be a successful franchise in today's world, whether it comes from the players, whether it comes from the general manager, coach, or in this case, you know, we're talking about, you know, the ownership. But right now, I think the Lakers are looking for themselves to say, where's this leadership going to come from? And they have to also do the most, I think one of the most important things that every franchise has to do is they have to upgrade their talent. Winning covers a multitude of sins. All of the teams have the same problems, but they need to upgrade their talent and they need to find the internal leadership that's needed to even be considered where they want to be, which they always talk about championship, but every team talks about championship if they're going to be a successful franchise moving forward.
Well, I agree with Marcellus. I mean, what can she say? I mean, what is her comeback? I mean, Magic put it out there on the table. You know, he went to trial and he was prepared. And I don't think she's prepared. And I'm going to piggyback to what I said, and I agree with BJ, is that's the problem in the NBA with some of the NBA organizations with hiring your friends and not the right people for the job. You know, just look at all the things that's going on inside the circle. Kobe Bryant linked to Rob Pelinka. He gets the GM job. Kurt Rambis is doing this. His wife is good friends with Jenny Buss. All this is tied together. At the end of the day, Magic came out, and I was with Magic on it. Like, clear your name, clear the brand. He didn't say an anonymous source. He came out publicly and manned up and said what he had to say, and he said it to Rob Pelinka. And I applaud him for it, man, because at the end of the day, they got to figure out how they could fix this. But I do know one thing, one person they can't point the finger at, and that's LeBron James, because disagree. He had nothing to do with it.
Disagree. And I'll say this not as a shot at LeBron, but what I'll say is when BJ's talking about the four principles of success, everybody's just way too big in terms of LeBron's a superstar. Magic's a superstar. Kobe Bryant has installed someone there to represent him. Kobe's a superstar.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Jeannie Buss is Jeannie Buss. There are no, like, Indians. Everybody's a chief. Mm-hmm. Everybody.
I agree.
And that makes things even more combustible because, again, LeBron's worth nearly $1 billion. That's an ego. Magic's worth nearly $1 billion. That's an ego. Jeannie Buss is worth $500 million. That's an ego. Kobe, worth around the same. You talk, other franchises don't have that. In terms, you know, Greg Popovich is a head coach, made some good money, blah, blah, blah. R.C. Buford, blah, blah. These aren't the biggest names and biggest egos in sports. The Lakers are dealing with that in a city that loves this kind of reality show drama. And so, unwittingly, just LeBron just bought, they've, to me, just dumped too many stars mm-hmm. into this situation. And a couple of people need to just be Indians. They've always had a superstar player, so LeBron's role is safe.
Right.
These other people behind us, don't hire superstars. Don't hire Magic Johnson. Right. Don't hire Kobe's puppet master or puppet to be in there. Sick. Hire some behind the scenes people.
And in Jenny's defense, she has to be careful about how she approaches and what she say about Magic, because Magic is loved by everyone.
Yeah.
So she has to be cautious. So she's tough in a bad place.
Joined now by some very special guests, Tony and Lauren Dungy, authors of the new book, We Chose You. We'll talk some football in a second, but let's start with your book, Tony, Lauren. What inspired you guys to write this book?
We decided to write the book because we believe adoption is beautiful. We have 7 children at home. They're all adopted. We wanted to support other families that have adopted or are considering adoption. And there is a big need for families to kind of step up to the plate and to adopt or foster kids. So those are the main reasons why we chose to write this book.
Now, what advice would you give someone who's on the fence
in terms of thinking about adoption. Candidly, I've had this conversation before. Sure. And I always questioned, would I have the same capacity to love a child that's not biologically mine? What would you say to
that? That's a valid question. I think you really have to investigate adoption before you jump into it. But there really, we found that there's really no difference when you're parenting your own birth children or adopted children. It's the same.
And many people do think that same. How would it be?
Or there's a lack of connection.
Once those kids get in your house, it's no different. It really is. And there's such a need. We got started in Florida, 18 years ago. We've got a son who's a senior in high school now. And we heard about the need and how many kids were waiting to be adopted, how many kids were living in group homes, how many kids were part of the foster care system. And it touched me, for sure. And it can be done.
Totally. Yeah. And I'm sorry, one more thing. In a positive way, you say there is no difference, but could there be a greater reward or something
Absolutely.
Of that nature?
Well, I think for the children, they know that they were prayed for, they were planned, and they were chosen. So that should make them feel special. And we've told our children that.
Yeah, I'll give you a great example. Our 18-year-old Jordan has some special needs. He was born with a medical condition. And after a couple of months, it became very obvious to us that God put it together, because we had the resources at the time. We had access to the doctors. I had great insurance. And there's no way he would have thrived the way he has. He's ready to graduate from high school now, wants to be a chef. And it was just God putting him in the right place.
How early did you guys adopt him?
He was a newborn, straight out of the hospital.
Okay, that leads to my question, because I've got some people close to me that are going through this process. When do you tell a child that he's adopted? When is the right time to break that news to him?
They're never too young. So you have age-appropriate discussions. When they're little babies, you talk about it. It's just a natural thing. You're reading books, you're having conversations, and they hear that word. It's a positive thing. It's a good thing. It's not a secret. It's not something that happened that we're not going to talk about. And we've talked to our children from the time that they were, you know, small toddlers. And they know they're adopted, they know they're loved, they're special, and they're in their forever home.
God brought you to us in a different way. That's all.
Yeah, to your point, my wife is adopted.
Is she really?
Wow. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and she says she talked about it her entire childhood.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I should have been asking you. Lauren, I want to apologize. I got Tony here.
That's all right.
All-time great football coach. We got to talk a little football.
Football.
Tony, rumors that Peyton Manning could be running the New York Jets. We've heard from Reggie Wayne, who thinks that wouldn't be a good fit for Peyton to be the executive. He wouldn't want to be fired by an owner. Do you think Peyton Manning would make a good football executive?
I think he'd make an excellent football executive. I don't think he's going to do it, just from my standpoint, because he knows he would jump into it 1,000 miles an hour, 24/7. I don't know if he's ready for that. But if he does choose to do it, he'll be fantastic. He knows how to be how to win. He knows how to be a good teammate. He knows how to build.
I mean, that seems like the million-dollar question. What is Peyton Manning's next move? Multi-million-dollar question. Broadcaster, we see him turn down those opportunities. Now executive roles shine away. Do you have any thoughts about that?
You know, he's got two young children. Mm-hmm. And I think if that wasn't the case, I could see him being a GM right now. But with the kids, I think he's got just a little hesitancy. If I get into this and I'm in that office all the time, I'm right back to my football career. Even more so, because I'm not just getting myself ready now, but I'm preparing a whole team. So I think that would be his hesitancy. I'm not sure which way he's going to go, but he's a talented guy, and he would be very good at it.
Tony, have you followed the Kareem Hunt transition to the Cleveland Browns? And maybe you're involved. Maybe they've asked for your insight or advice. But I saw where Kareem has given his life to Christ, gotten baptized. And the Browns, Freddie Kitchens, had to come out and basically explain that they went and supported him. Some people skeptical. It's jailhouse religion or whatever. And I'm like, no. It's just a gesture. No, this is not a gesture. This is something that can change this young man's life.
It really can. And we're always skeptical. We don't want to give people second chances. I don't know Kareem Hunt, but you've got to take a man at his word. You've got to believe that. People, that's all everybody hit me with Michael Vick. Oh, it's just, you know, this is just to get back in the NFL. And I sat with Mike Vick in Leavenworth Prison, and I looked in his eyes, and I knew, I could sense when he told me, you know, the Lord was in my life. I got to the top of my profession. I forgot about the Lord, and I made a big mistake. And I told Andy Reid, I said, no, this young man is serious. You can count on him.
Kareem Hunt, the Browns took a little heat because the organization went to his baptism. I'm sure you think that's the right thing for the team to do.
It absolutely is. And that baptism was not a football event. That was a life event. And so as someone who's interested in his life, they went and supported him. And that is the right thing to do, and I don't think you should have to explain that.
All right, Tony, still a lot of conversation about black NFL head coaches. There's only three right now. I'm someone that has pointed to the Tony Dungy tree, all the coaches that you created off your tree, black coaches. And I've looked at Mike Tomlin and have questioned, there is no tree here. And I'm wondering if we can, is there something we should be doing or pressuring the NFL to do beyond the Rooney Rule to help alleviate this problem?
Well, and the simple reason is, if you look at my tree, it was all defensive coaches. Okay? And now we don't like defensive coaches. Mm. We're all enamored with offense and quarterback coaches and scoring. It's like we forgot that Bill Belichick was a defensive coach. He's pretty good. Pete Carroll was a defensive coach. He's won some Super Bowls. Mike Tomlin has won some Super Bowls. But no, we want the scoring machine and the young guns. I think our owners have to understand that head coaching is about leadership. It's not necessarily just being able to coach the quarterback.
Any revisions to the Rooney Rule? Do you think it has executed properly, or how do you edit it?
The Rooney Rule is about a spirit, okay? And Dan Rooney's idea was you take your time, you investigate everything, and you look at all the candidates. If you honestly do that, you'll get some good coaches and you'll get some minority coaches. But if you just want to check the box and say, I'm filling out the Rooney Rule, I've already made up my mind, I don't care what I see, I'm going to hire the person I wanted to hire anyway, then you can't legislate that. So you've got to follow the spirit of the Rooney Rule if you want results. And I don't think we're following the spirit of it now.
Tony, thank you so much for being here. Lauren, thank you so much for being here. People, pick up the book, We Chose You. It's about adoption and why it's a great thing. Joined now by longtime NFL player Jeff Schwartz. Time to get antisocial with our man Darnell. Darnell.
Came through dripping.
Yes, sir. Marcel's looking like a bag of hot fries right now.
You came here loaded.
Hey,
you ain't
feeling good today.
I feel a mess, too.
All right, what's popping?
Yes, sir. We're going to start with the Cowboys, where Ezekiel Elliott is back in the headlines after a video surfaced from this weekend of Zeke knocking down a security guard at a music festival in Las Vegas and then being handcuffed by the police. Cowboys Vice President Stephen Jones was asked about it and said, it's unfair to comment at this point. Zeke has got a big heart. These are all bumps. People have challenges. Should the NFL take action here?
No,
not at all. Look, Ezekiel wishes that he could knock down defenders that easily. That was a flop by security guard. I mean, the chicken wing wasn't even that strong, that thorough. That said, this needs to be handled internally. This needs to be something that he needs to be reprimanded, but not publicly scorned because of this situation. I think there's just, like you said, too early, and a couple of details that look a little murky.
The NFL should absolutely not investigate. They probably will, because we know they love to investigate players when they really should not be investigating players. This is something we talked about yesterday. His agent has got to get in his ear. Like, dude, you want to get paid, you got to stop having these things in public happen where cameras on you. And you mentioned, look, it wasn't a chicken. It wasn't much. It doesn't matter. It's on camera. It looks bad.
Exactly.
Yep. NFL should stay out of it. This is Jerry Jones' problem right now.
Right.
Next.
All right, Whitlock, man, you got some explaining to do here.
Some explaining.
I came across this throwback video of you from Freezing Cold Takes, and you had something bold to say on Eli Manning. Take a listen.
I think Eli now has the right to claim that he's as good a quarterback, if not better, than his brother. And I think the way Brady played, I think it took a little shine off of him being compared to Joe Montana. And I think that for Belichick, I think it gives his critics an opportunity to go back and talk about Spygate, and he hasn't won a Super Bowl since. I think Peyton Manning's done playing football, and Eli Manning clearly isn't. He's in his prime. If he doesn't get another Super Bowl, I certainly see him playing another NFC Championship. As his resume continues to build, yes, I think when it's over, he'll be regarded in higher regard than Peyton Manning.
Man,
wait.
As a journalist, I know you like to be ahead of the story.
Whoa.
On a scale from 1 to 100, how embarrassing is this take?
What?
Come on, Whit.
I'm going to go with 98. I'm going to go with 98. Hey, look, Peyton Manning, I thought had a career-ending neck injury at that time. I thought he was done.
Okay.
Eli just won his second Super Bowl.
All right.
Beat Tom Brady twice. I figured he'd win another one. It's a bad take.
So bad timing, huh? Okay.
It wasn't just one take, though. It was like multiple. Yeah. Eli was
getting, they kept letting him talk.
It was like Eli,
Brady.
And then Brady also, we know, obviously.
Everything was wrong.
Yeah. Oh, 98 is probably not accurate.
Man, you were sinking low into that seat. One. You was on the edge of that Cadillac. And that was young, early Whitlock. I'm breaking through this TV game. Hot take it. What were you doing? You untucked with the shirt on the knee.
Had the mustache.
The mustache. Oh, you thought you were cute.
I was drugged up. They spiked my drink. Bad take. Freezing cold takes. I can't believe you did that to me.
Next! Yeah. Switching over to Marcellus' favorite team, where for the first time in 42 years, the Buffalo Bills will let another player wear O.J. Simpson's number 32. Mm. We all know O.J. was a phenomenal athlete, but his troubled past has exceeded his greatness on the field. When asked how he felt about this, O.J. responded by saying, quote, "Whatever they do is fine with me. That's how I feel. When I played there, I tried to honor the team. Since I left, I've always tried to honor the Bills. And to be honest, it's not something I think about. There's too much else going on in life." Are you okay with the Bills doing this?
Hell no. You know me, and I'm Bills Mafia right here. I mean, but we live in a different world where, you know, not even tattoos are permanent anymore. You know, you get those removed. And now a guy who put in work on the field and to the point where you gave him this honor, which Ralph Wilson respected, but now he's gone and departed. So new ownership is like, hey, we're going to take into the conversation the totality of your work, more so than just you as the football player for our organization. I think that's unfair. I don't like the precedent that it sends.
They should have asked him if the player could wear the number before giving it away. Just like we saw Dwayne Haskins call Joe Theismann and ask, can I have your number? I kind of, like you, kind of old
ask
school.
Ask OJ for permission.
You're not really going to ask him, but at least tell him, I guess, somehow. I don't know. I feel like the jersey number's retired for a reason.
For a reason.
It should stay retired for a
for
reason.
For that reason.
Y'all missing the whole deal.
Let me hear.
I blame the kid who even wants to wear 32.
I'm with you there.
That's my issue. And again, just in terms of and I'm not talking about respect for OJ. I'm just, why would you want to wear OJ's number?
Oh, I ain't mean it that way.
I'm talking about me.
Do you think that he even really realizes what number he's asking for in Buffalo? Like, that's a real conversation.
It's the only number that matters in Buffalo. OJ's the only.
Oh, wait a minute.
I bet you the kid asking for this number.
Bruce Smith.
Really doesn't even, is not even aware about what the whole story is.
Yeah. It doesn't have to get political.
He don't know the OJ story.
He may not know 32 Juice.
Yeah.
Buffalo Bills. You might think
he knows OJ's story, but he probably doesn't know that.
I wouldn't want to wear OJ's number in Buffalo.
I would say that. Like, I not for the reasons like guilty, not guilty, all that. I'm just saying I'm not into taking someone whose jersey was retired and putting it on. Like, I'm like, wait a minute. Why are you unretiring a jersey? Because it's almost telling you that we could do this to you as well. So why would I want to wear that number in that honor?
All right, time now for Darnell's question of the day. Take it away.
All right, guys, so yesterday, Kim Kardashian put out a tweet with a complaint to Jack in the Box saying, quote, "Hey, Jack in the Box, I have a serious complaint, but I won't fully put you out on blast. Check your corporate email inbox and send me a DM with a direct person from my team to contact, pronto." We're starting to see more and more stars use their social media platforms as leverage. I wanted to ask you guys, do you think this was a bad look?
Terrible look.
Really?
Come on.
You had a bad fast food experience, and you Kim Kardashian, and you going to go to all the lengths of Twitter, check your corporate.
The fries was cold.
Contact me pronto.
What? Come on. Well, I love Kim Kardashian. Come on now,
well,
Kim.
Well, yeah, look, it's always clout chasing and everything social media. It's some smoke somewhere. She wants to cause some kind of reaction. Look, one, what you doing at Jack in the Crack? I thought, you know, you looking like that, Jack in the Crack, but that's what them injection get you.
Oh, Jack in the Crack. Jack in the Crack is good, though.
No, I had it 2 weeks ago. The spicy chicken sandwich has fallen off. I think what she's trying to say is, don't let me chance the rapper you and get you all out there. Hit me up, fix the damn sandwiches, and we can be good with this. If not, it was bad 2 weeks ago.
This is a bad look for her. I'm surprised she even went by herself to get Jack in the Box. What could have happened that was so bad at Jack in the Box where she had to put out a passive-aggressive tweet about their food or service?
That sandwich. I'm telling you.
You know, for a fact.
Soggy buns.
The soggy buns.
What you going to Jack in the Box for that for? You go for the taco.
You ain't lying. Oh, well, I had a full-piece taco and a curly fry. Full-piece taco, double jack with cheese, and then I get my spicy chicken sandwich.
That American
and
cheese.
A large strawberry shake.
Ooh!
And go straight to sleep. Oh, getting that right after work.
I get the large diet strawberry shake.
I eat all that fried food, get a diet drink. God, this ain't a bad look. I ain't mad at it.
I love pulling the taco out, and you know the American cheese is like folded over the top of the taco.
Stop playing with me.
Shells.
Yes.
So underrated their tacos.
It's a bad look. But Kim, if I ever do anything wrong, please put out a tweet demanding that I contact you.
All right,
it all right, welcome back. Welcome to Speak for Yourself, the most fearless show in sports. Yeah. Whitlock and Wiley, NBA champion Kendrick Perkins and NBA agent, former Chicago Bull B.J. Armstrong are back. Let's move to the Eastern Conference Final, where the Bucks are looking to bounce back tonight. After dropping Game 3 to the Raptors in double overtime Sunday night, Giannis Antetokounmpo was terrible in Game 3, putting up 12 points and 8 turnovers before fouling out. But when the Greek Freak was asked if he was disappointed in his performance, he pushed back hard, saying, quote, "Hell no, I'm Giannis. What I've done in my life so far, sending money to my family, putting my brothers in private school, taking care of family in Nigeria and Greece, disappointed in a game? I'd be disappointed in myself if I was disappointed."
All right. Rap game strong.
Are you disappointed with Giannis's reaction?
I'm not, actually. It's amazing that we love the cliches that come from coaches until they take human form. You know, one of the cliches you always hear is stay even keel. Don't get too high with the wins and don't get too low with the losses. Don't really look into it that seriously. Just be ready for the next effort. And he's actually living that through. And now we have a problem with that. So it's crazy that the same thing could be looked at so many different ways. And this kind of reminds me of a guy who's like, I'm not going to admit to any failure to show any weakness. And I like that. I remember watching a lot of boxing matchups, and you see them when they have that face-off right before the fight starts. And there was a day where, man, you better look them in the eye. If you don't look in the eye, you weak, you soft. And then there was a day where, like, don't look them in the eye, because if you look them in the eye, you're going to humanize something you're about to destroy. And it just always shifts. This is a guy who's just basically saying, look, game over, can't do anything else about it, ready for the next one. No, I'm not mad at myself and what I did. I will be ready for the next one. Not mad at that.
I'm Giannis. I love it. I love the fact that he just came out and said, took the responsibility of, maybe I didn't play my best game, but you know what? I'm here. And the most amazing thing is they still had a chance to win that game. They were right there. Yeah, yeah. So yeah. Giannis understands, I think, as a young player, it's great to see that not only he doesn't have to have a great game on the offensive end, he can affect the game in other ways. Even though he may statistically didn't play his best game, he still had an opportunity to win a game. So if I were him, I would have the same amount of confidence going into Game 4.
Well, I love it. I'm Giannis, but he has to back it up. KD said, you know who I am. I'm Kevin Durant, and he went out and backed it up. Giannis, he got to back it up. But guess what? He's still being guarded by one of the best defenders in the league in Kawhi. So at the end of the day, Giannis does have a history. If you look at the one game, the bad game that he had against Detroit, he bounced back and came back and had 40. You look at the one bad game in Game 1 that he had against the Celtics, he came back with a 29-10 in a blowout. So he lives up to, you know, he takes pride in, for as like if he have a bad game, you expect him to come out and he's going to produce tonight.
I think the only way he couldn't be disappointed is because he didn't watch the tape.
If he watched the tape, he'd be disappointed. Game three, he was miserable. And I really don't – he may have an okay game, but I don't expect him to be phenomenal in this game. Toronto has a defensive scheme led by Kawhi Leonard on him, but they put a little wall around for Giannis that causes him to turn the ball over, limits him in what he can do. And they got to the end of that game before he fouled out, and he really wasn't even an option for them offensively. He was not an option. It was Chris Middleton. It was George Hill. It was Brogdon. It was anybody but Giannis. Yeah. And at some point, I was like, Giannis helps him on the defensive end. He's certainly a freak on the boards. But I was like, on the offensive end, they need to get Mirotić out here.
Absolutely.
And so I think they're going to frustrate him again tonight.
But I think Toronto win the game because even though the game was close, Toronto had a few players that didn't play well also. I mean, Kawhi Leonard was 11 for 25. Danny Green struggled. Lowry fouled out. He didn't have his best performance. And obviously Van Fleet.
Van Fleet was
terrible. He's been terrible all playoffs. Yep. But he got to give us something. He got to give Toronto something. But I think Toronto comes out and get this win tonight. And just to piggyback on what you said, I think they do have a scheme for Giannis, but Boston also had a scheme, and he had to go back and watch film because he still got to where he needed
Boston
to
had
go.
A scheme, but no Kawhi at the head of it.
Right. I agree.
Yeah, but it takes you double overtime to beat me in a close contest, and I'm Giannis, and I have an off night. I tie my career high in turnovers, and we're still in the ball game. Like, for him to sulk in that moment, I think I would have been and had a greater reaction to that versus a guy who's just like, I'm Giannis, taken from Kevin Durant, I'm Kevin Durant. And I like this response to a guy who knows how close they really were. And he still had a positive plus minus compared to Middleton and some of the other guys.
One of the things I want to point out is game one, Toronto still had the confidence to feel that they could win that game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and being I was in Chicago last year at the pre-draft, the Toronto Raptors felt that they had that game in hand, if you will, and they have the confidence to do it. Many people aren't talking about it. This is a must game from a playoff perspective if you're looking at this series for the Milwaukee Bucks. Because if you get back to 2-2, going back to Milwaukee, Toronto feels that they have a chance. They felt they really won that game. But they did everything but win that game in game one. So if I'm Milwaukee right now, I'm putting a lot of emphasis on this game, trying to get up 3-1 going back knowing that I, you know, can close out the series.
All right, before we go, I want to explain why my favorite athlete, Magic Johnson, just set a very dangerous precedent for young people. He quit his job as president of the Los Angeles Lakers and offered a weak justification. It was no fun working with Rob Pelinka. He wanted my job and he backstabbed me. Magic took his ball, his $500 million bank account, and went home. It's childlike behavior that many in the media are justifying as righteous because Magic lives in the protected space of celebrity adulation. It's also being defended because many of the ex-athletes discussing the issue on television are inexperienced in the politics of corporate America. During his ESPN interview on Monday, Magic seemed baffled that his decision-making faced mild resistance within the Lakers organization. He was equally troubled by Pelinka's ambition and gossiping. According to Magic, Pelinka spread the accurate rumor that Magic rarely showed up in the office to work. Let me break the news to Magic and any young person trying to learn from this Lakers fiasco. The typical workplace is filled with treachery. You will work closely with people you do not like, people you cannot trust, people who want your job, and people who gossip about your work ethic. Quitting is the choice of the weak. Magic can quit because God blessed him with rare athletic gifts that enabled him to become a near billionaire. There's nothing righteous about what Magic did. It's privileged behavior. Quite frankly, it's embarrassing. Magic allegedly is one of sports' greatest competitors. Rob Pelinka outsmarted and outfought Magic for control of the Lakers. I want to share a personal story that's illustrative of the typical work environment. In 1994, I was hired by the Kansas City Star to be a sports columnist. I instantly set the town and the newspaper on fire. My bosses were so overjoyed by my success that in 1996, they decided to invest more heavily in the sports section of the newspaper. They decided to hire a new sports editor and gave me the final approval over the new sports editor. We hired the guy I chose. The first thing the new sports editor did was tell my bosses that I was overpaid by my previous sports editor. Then my new sports editor spent the next 2 years trying to prove that I was overpaid. At the time, I could have easily quit and moved to a different newspaper. But that's not what I wanted to do. I owned that town, and I hadn't fully milked the position for all it was worth. I won the long war. I stomped out my adversaries with my work, accomplished all of my goals, and left Kansas City when it made sense for me. Quitting is for people too weak or too to fight or too spoiled to know how. Jeff Schwartz is back. Let's move to Pittsburgh, where it looks like Big Ben took a big step as a leader yesterday, admitting that he went too far in publicly criticizing Antonio Brown last season, adding that he still views Brown as a good friend, but it doesn't seem like the receiver feels the same way, with AB appearing to respond to Big Ben by tweeting, "Two-face." Mm. All right, Marcel, it's a question here. Who's winning the divorce, Big Ben or AB?
Oh, man, this divorce court, huh? Let's go here. I think AB is winning it. Both parties will know that they've been in the fight. You know, there's going to be some scratches. There's going to be some issues. But look, Big Ben is, he got to keep the house, all right? So he get to stay in Pittsburgh, right? But he ain't got no real friends. Like, all these little youngsters playing Fortnite, those ain't your real friends. And none of them successful. They weren't there from day one. No new friends. Drake said it a long time ago. Meanwhile, you look at it, and AB is like, okay, this is how it's going to be. I got to go. Seeking his independence, land somewhere. Everybody's like, oh, look what happened to you. You fell off. Oh, this is a MVP conversation quarterback and a Super Bowl winning coach and 18th ranked passing attack before I got there. So this is a way that somebody publicly looks like they may have taken a loss, but because he's doing it his way, he's not doing it his fake way where it's all these youngsters, like AB said, that don't really buy into what Ben Roethlisberger's doing. They just got to kind of kiss up until they get to their level. I'm with AB.
Big Ben 1,000% won this divorce.
I'm listening.
I know Antonio Brown got paid. He got what he wanted. Big Ben is on the better franchise, the better coach, the better team right now, the better chance to win. AB went to the Raiders. The Raiders haven't won anything in 20 years.
Yep.
They are dysfunctional. We don't know if Carr is an elite quarterback or not right now. They're in a division owned by the Chiefs. Andy Reid owns that division. He beats the Chargers. He beats the Raiders all the time. Beats the Broncos. AB looks like a diva in this situation. He looks like a scorned lover. He's firing back at Big Ben. Big Ben apologized. You asked for him to apologize. He did what you asked of him, and he's still tweeting about him. He cannot get over the Steelers.
It's, yeah, but it's theatrics. I mean, sincere apologies don't have the theatrics that come with. You lost me. So Antonio Brown, Big Ben, that relationship, you lost a star receiver, and you think you can replace him? You may can, but we know being number two versus number one is different for Juju. We'll see what he does with that. That's a graduation that not a lot can handle, not a lot of people.
I'm interested to see this offense this year not having to be so dependent on maybe throwing to Antonio Brown, having to do different things, use more parts. I think Big Ben's going to have a fantastic year. First time in 12, 15 years, people have doubted him.
Yeah.
I said the Steelers are not going to be the team. Everyone's on the Browns bandwagon, which is completely wild right now. I think they're going to have a great year. And Big Ben, he's in a better situation. He's on a franchise that is known for winning. Mm. Antonio Brown is on a team that doesn't even have a stadium to play in this year.
Look, to me, Ben's winning a divorce because AB still seems emotional and hurt.
Oh, yeah.
He's still calling names.
Yeah.
Big Ben's like,
he's sleeping in a different bed. He's like, damn, this ain't where I'm used to sleeping. But
right. And so Big Ben is like, hey, man, I'm sorry I hurt you. I hope you're okay. I hope your wife and kids are okay.
Mm-hmm.
I hope, you know, let's still be friends.
Yeah.
You know, even though we're broken up, let's still be friends. It's best for the kids and the whole family.
Yeah.
And AB is still mad.
Oh, yeah.
Still throwing a tantrum and caught two-faced and all this. So that, to me, seems like Ben is winning the divorce. Ben is over it. He's moved on. AB hasn't. He's out there in Oakland. They're headed to Las Vegas. John Gruden is more sideshow and gimmick than perhaps Super Bowl-winning coach. Derek Carr, again, just like Jeff said, you don't know who he is. Big Ben's going to the Hall of Fame.
But you know what's funny? Flip it. All right, so Big Ben's over it, apologizing, everything's good. that shows me you won all the way in it in the first place when we were together. You got over it that fast to the point where now you can go out there and say this. How invested were you? I like the fact that I don't like Antonio on Twitter all day. I will say, though, I like that he is emotionally transparent. Like, I was all in. Remember, he's a self-made man. Ben Roethlisberger, a tremendous talent. First rounder, you saw this coming a little bit. Now, Antonio Brown. So, Antonio Brown, like, kick me out the house. Oh, I've been kicked out before. I've been an outlier before. So, y'all better watch somebody who has that kind of ticker. He can make it happen. He can make something out of dust.
Ben apologized for just one event. He didn't say he was all in. He just apologized for an event where he went on his radio show and blamed Antonio Brown for something that wasn't his fault. Ben's always
been
in.
That's the only thing we have of record. The private issues is what we don't
have. And AB's gone. That's gone.
Yep. Uncle Jimmy's here. Your thoughts on the show so far?
Oh, I'm sorry. You talking to me. I was admiring my beauty right there. man, let's go and get to it, man. Big dummy of the day. Big dummy of the day go to anybody sitting up here bad-mouthing Jack in the Box, talking about they chicken sandwich don't went downhill after at 4 o'clock in the morning, boy. You get what you get.
About damn time.
Oh, I know, right? Maybe because it was actually 10 p.m., not 4 in the morning. Maybe
no, it's because it was about food.
Let's keep this going with Marcellus getting the big dummies. All right, here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about Curry. Mm. LeBron James is more valuable than Stephen Curry, but King James is not as important. Curry's style of play has changed the NBA, and his team-first mindset has created a consistent culture of winning.
I won't make this mistake of exaggerating an individual's greatness based on team success.
All right, Uncle Jimmy.
Yeah.
What's your take on Steph Curry versus LeBron?
It's a sad day today, man. Uncle Jimmy ain't got no jokes today.
Really?
Wearing that? You don't?
Hey, man, it's a sad day when I got to admit that my nephew's right.
Whoa.
Ooh, yeah, I like it.
Hey, man.
It's a good day.
I'm going to be honest with you.
Please.
Steph Curry is going to surpass LeBron James as being one of the greatest.
I can't take you seriously right now. Look,
bro, look, let's break it down then, all right?
Let's go.
All right, let's look at Steph. Man, Steph got everything he needs to succeed. Mm. He got structure, support, foundation.
Yeah.
He got everything that a child needs to succeed in this world today. First of all, the main thing he got is great parents, great coach, great organization, great teammate. He has everything that LeBron James needed to be the greatest player of all times. See, now me, myself, personally, I can relate to LeBron because me and LeBron come from similar backgrounds. We come from an inner city background. We come from a single mother. Mm-hmm. We've gone through all of the problems that you have to deal with coming from the inner city. Right. You know, we had it, both came, had a situation, had a child out of wedlock. So therefore, all those things put us in a position to where we had to be the man of the home. Mm. And see, so many times you take a kid and tell him you the man of the home, when really he's still just a man. See, Steph.
Child, you mean?
No, I mean, he's still a child. I apologize. Right. But
put
you know
what
I'm growing up. Look here, man. Don't mess with me.
Put the hands
Bottom
back.
Line is, Steph had the ability to be a child. LeBron had to be a man. Mm. And he had to adapt the mentality of a man. Mm. You see what I'm saying?
I do. So now he's the
man. Hey, man, I respect LeBron immensely. I got nothing but love for him and all of his accomplishments. Hey, man, and to be honest with you, LeBron look at Steph like, damn, I wish I had one of them. He like, what you talking about? A daddy? Or I wish I had one of them. What? A great coach?
What?
Or I wish I had one of them. What's that? Great teammates? Man, if LeBron came from a structured environment, it would be a lot easier for him to accept criticism from somebody else. If he came from a structured environment, then he could build a structured society. But he can't build what Steph built because he didn't come from what Steph came from. Steph came from Dale and Sonya. They prepared Steph for this. LeBron ain't prepared for this.
What?
He's done a great job.
What?
Dude, I guarantee you what Steph has achieved, he's achieved it with a hell of a lot of stress, a lot less stress than what LeBron done had to go through to get it.
Them ankles, you sure?
Hey, bro, look, you joking.
You forgot the ankle year?
You joking, but look here. Look at what LeBron's gone through, but now look at what he's done for his kids. Look at what he's done for his family. The fact I'm trying to tell you is, now LeBron Jr., that might be your next Steph Curry, because that brother got it laid out for him.
Mmm. Mmm. Pretty good, Uncle Jimmy.
That we be going deep with the chopsticks.
But I'm gonna be thinking about that one all day. Cause you're what? Right. Bronny Jr. could be the next Steph Curry.
Yeah.
LeBron has built.
Yeah. So LeBron James is Dale Curry?
Maybe.
Good luck being better than Daddy. That ain't happening.
He might. Hold on. How many rings has Daddy got? So, how many rings Dale Curry got?
All right, we got to go. We're going to be thinking about it. We may circle back to that one.
I don't know. That's trivia.
I got Steph at GOAT status at 89. He's up 11 points, 24 in job performance, 24 all-time greatest, 24 character. 17 authenticity, 89 go.
I'm basically with you. he had to go up a couple categories. Obviously, Steph Curry is balling. Best playoff series he ever had in terms of statistics and points. That's amazing. Steph Curry's doing his best when they're on demand right now. No KD, no Boogie, still balling. I see you, brother.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.